Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One. Joining you as always, Mr. Mark Hamilton and Mr. Mark Daly. My goodness, what a day, what a weekend. This was an extraordinary Grand Prix. It was surreal, chaotic, absurd, exciting, thrilling. I don't know that I've ever seen an event quite like this. And you can reflect back on Canada in 2011. Obviously, Germany in 2019 is still fairly fresh in our memory. But I don't think I've ever seen anything that was quite as unpredictable as this. And last week, you and I hinted that there could be a little bit of moisture. And we talked about the fact that we haven't seen any wet races this year. And I think for a lot of the folks that are new to Formula One, what we've seen this year, well, not necessarily predictable because we've had some unpredictable outcomes. A lot of that, what we've seen has been pretty standard, routine, fair. This weekend was completely different. So to recap quickly, Hamilton storms through qualifying, puts in an absolutely stellar performance. Coming out of qualifying, the Red Bull team determined that the power unit that was in Max Verstappen's car, the power unit that was carried over from that crash in Silverstone, probably wasn't adequate. It looked like it was developing a problem. They swap out the power unit. We go to the race today, Sunday, Hungary, just outside of Budapest, 20 kilometers to the northeast of the city. We have a rain shower within an hour of the start of the Grand Prix. All the cars previously had been fitted with their slicks. They then get put on the intermediates. We go out to start the race. Bottas has a ton of wheel spin off the line. He's quickly passed on the sides by Lando Norris, Max Verstappen. They go into the front corner. Hamilton had a fantastic start. He's away. Unfortunately, Bottas locks up behind Lando, rear ends Lando, destroys his race. They end up collecting Max Verstappen. They end up collecting Sergio Perez. In the meantime, on the inside of the corner, Lance Stroll, the Canadian driver for Aston Martin, does the exact same thing, carries too much speed, tries to correct, locks up his wheels, goes into the side of Charles Leclerc, ends his race. So within seconds of the start of this race, Bottas is out, Stroll is out. We quickly lose Bottas, Lando, Perez. It was a disaster. It was chaos, but it set up an absolutely exciting Grand Prix with an outcome that I don't think any of us could ever have expected. I was thrilled. I was excited. I was jolted out of bed because, you know, blurry eyes, 6 in the morning. I'm watching on my phone, quickly make my way downstairs, boot it up on the 65-inch Sony, start the race over just because I had to revisit the entire thing because I wasn't sure if it was real or if I was dreaming it. But the best part was, even after the restart, which we'll talk about, the race was a thriller right until the end. And rarely can we say that about modern Grand Prix. And if this is a taste, if this is a preview of what we can start to expect in 2022 and beyond, which is close, tight racing and passing, then I'm all for it. I'm all in. My friend, you're on vacation. Thank you so much for making the effort to join. I know it was a challenge to get you on the line tonight, but thank you for joining. Your thoughts, your impressions after the Hungarian Grand Prix?
Well, it was so unpredictable, right? And just right from the beginning, because there was something that was unexpected. I was watching on the F1 TV app, which has been my preferred go-to this season, away from the usual TSN feed that we get here in Canada, which is Sky Sports anyways, but I've just become like a real, you know, fan of the F1 TV app and the ability to toggle through different cameras and all those, you know, different things, which is really, really cool. Anyways, we didn't have Crofty. We didn't have Nico Rosberg doing the commentary. It was the local English feed. And I swore they were commentating, maybe just going over making their shopping list. There was no emotion, no excitement in their voices whatsoever. when we saw this, what Charles Leclerc so rightly called bowling right. in that first right. Couple right. of corners. But it was something else. Now, I just have a quick question. Is anybody keeping a running tab now of how much money Mercedes has destroyed in opponents' cars over the past two races? We know it was $1.8 million for Max. Now we have to take into account the damage done to Lando's car, the damage done to Valtteri's car, the damage done to Perez's car, and also to Max's car, who was a victim of all that. I mean, obviously, it would be a little bit too far to say, stretch into the realms or dip our toes into the realms of the more conspiratorial theories out there, but intentional or unintentional, whatever it is, they have really, through their, bumper car racing the past two races in Hungary and Great Britain, taken out a lot of people. And you can understand why Red Bull will be just throwing their arms up in the air in exasperation. But it was really just, it was unreal just the way that race started. And I couldn't help but think in retrospect, considering how quickly the track dried out, and I'm by no means an expert or have a real depth of knowledge when it comes to any of the procedural parts of Formula One rules and regulations, and I know that the track will dry out, obviously, once the cars get on it, but it was also like 26 degrees Celsius at the start of the race. And even though that was a rain shower, it's a pretty warm time of year for that part of the world. I couldn't help but think that if they maybe had delayed that race start by 20 or even 30 minutes, that track naturally would have dried up. So I don't know what sort of considerations they have to keep there. But I mean, apart from Antonio Giovinazzi, who dived into the pits to go full wets at the end of that formation lap, everybody went on to inters. Everybody except Antonio made the wrong call. And it was just absolute chaos. And it didn't really take too long for them to call that, flag that session, bring out the reds, and rightly bring everybody back and clear up the debris from everywhere. And then just to give it a few minutes, well, more than a few minutes until they did the restart. And then that was incredible in and of itself. It reminded me very much of Indy in 2005. However, there were six cars starting that race, and that was for a completely different reason. But that was bizarre, watching Lewis race away by himself when the other remaining cars, which I guess would have been about 16 at the time when you subtract, well, 15, I guess, at the time, if you subtract guys like Perez and Stroll and Leclerc, Lando, etc. And the rest of them all dived into the pits at the end of that second formation lap, and leaving Lewis to go around. And then after he went in after a couple of laps to change tires, he quickly dropped down to the back of the race order. It was just, it was incredible. It was just, I couldn't help but thinking that it was a blunder from the Mercedes pit wall. I mean, ultimately he was redeemed. I mean, ultimately he ended up, finishing obviously on the podium. But again, what do we talk about on Thursday night, Mark, but just how crucial it is to qualify well here in Hungary. And ultimately I think that just being at the front, being on pole, is what really helped keep Lewis Hamilton out of trouble and avoid all that mayhem at the beginning, because Max getting collected in that damaged his barge boards, damaged his floor. And I mean, salvaging a point, that might be a crucial point come the end of the year, but it was just bizarre. I've never seen anything like it.
You're absolutely right. In that moment where Lewis was starting on the grid by himself, to me, was surreal. And I quickly screenshot it and I posted it on the Twitter feed, because you draw that great parallel to the 2005 US Grand Prix, where there were six cars, and again, for very different reasons, and no other cars ended up joining that Grand Prix. And of course, in this case, all the other cars did join. But as Lewis and the rest of the field were going around on the formation lap, you quickly got a sense of how dry that track was. And I know in the post-race comments, Nicholas Latifi was talking about the fact that he was radioing back that the bulk of the track was bone dry in the 30 minutes that it took to clear up that debris, get everyone into the pits under the red flag, do as many repairs as possible for the cars that were impacted by contact. That track had dried out. And you make a great point that not only was it 26 degrees, but it was really windy. And if it's warm and it's windy, that moisture is going to get wicked off the surface very, very quickly. And that's exactly what happens. And you're absolutely right. Toto Wolff and the entire Mercedes team are absolutely adamant, ultimately, that the decision that they made not to bring Lewis in after the formation lap to switch onto slick tires was the right decision. And he says, I think it was 100% the right decision and I stand by it. He says, at the end, you need to make the call out there and judge whether it's dry enough or not. I thought that within one lap, it couldn't possibly dry up like it did. And at the end, you have to take it on the chin that it was the wrong outcome. But the decision was right. We calculated that we would have come out sixth with the train of cars going to the pits. Now you're more clever, but it is what it is. And I think for all of us sitting at home, it was incredibly obvious that it was the wrong decision. We could see the helicopter views. We could see the entirety of the track. We don't necessarily know what the teams knew when they were in the pits under that red flag. But ultimately, Lewis stands by himself. He's got to go in. He's got to pit right away, get onto those slicks. And at that point, he's at the back of the field and he has to fight through that entire train of traffic. And of course, we talked about this in the past as well, and you alluded it to it last week, that sometimes Hungary can be a procession. It's an old school track. It's a pre-90s track. It's very, very tight. It's very difficult to overtake. And ultimately, Hamilton had to do some serious work today to put himself in a position where he could claim as many points as he could. And all the credit to him. But I think we would be remiss as well. We haven't even spoken to the race winner, the winner of this Grand Prix. But I do have to say that it was a heartbreaking race, less so for the Red Bull family and for Helmut and for Christian Horner. But it was heartbreaking for Max. It was heartbreaking, obviously, for Sergio Perez, that once again, they get caught up in some tremendous bad luck. And looking back at the race classifications earlier this season, you look at Red Bull, they had a stellar start to the season right through the Austrian Grand Prix. In the first nine races, they had a car finishing either first or second. Mm-hmm. In the first nine races, Max himself had finished first or second in eight of those first nine Grand Prix. And then all of a sudden, they hit a bit of bad luck. And it just happens to coincide with a period of time where Mercedes seems to have developed some significant pace. Red Bull seems to have lost some top line speed, but whatever those aero changes were that Mercedes introduced at Silverstone, it seems to be making a world of difference, but unfortunately just seems to coincide with a period where Red Bull is encountering some really, really tragic bad luck. But I felt terrible for Max. I felt terrible for Perez. I think Max deserves all the credit in the world. He went into the pits, the team, whatever they could do did whatever they could do to repair that barge board, the floor. And of course, when your floor is damaged, you're not driving air to that rear wing. You don't have the downforce that you normally have. You can't carry speed into the corners. But ultimately, credit to Max for putting in a mega effort despite the damage. And I think he recognizes that every point matters. But ultimately, do you want to speak or allude to the Grand Prix winner, or should we tease that and come back after a break?
Well, yeah, we'll do that in a second. But I was just going to say, you made a good point just about the way that things have gone south for Red Bull in recent races, and they've turned around somewhat for Mercedes. But here we are now going into the summer break. And I think if you're Red Bull, you're happy now that you have 3 weeks now to reset, so that this break is coming at exactly the perfect moment. Whereas Mercedes, who are just resurgent in the past couple of weeks, might be thinking, okay, well, this is a bit of unfortunate timing, considering now we've got a bit of momentum coming out of the last two races or so. But now, we have these 3 weeks going into the summer break. Everybody, we're going to have the shutdown during that time. Everybody's going to walk away. Everybody's going to have enjoy their summer holiday. Then we come back to Belgium in 3 weeks. And I think it's going to set up for a very, very intriguing race at Spa-Francorchamps in three and a half weeks time, or whatever it is now. And then, but we have to obviously say what tell everybody what the final race classification is. So for those of you that didn't watch, now if you saw this and you didn't watch the race, you might have been wondering if you'd woken up and it was April 1st. But the race classification top 10, Esteban Ocon for Alpine, winning his first Grand Prix, winning his first race for the team, the rebranded Alpine team. Second was Sebastian Vettel for Aston Martin, who was looking quite pacey and really put Esteban under a lot of pressure. Now, there's an asterisk beside Vettel because he was subsequently disqualified for a fuel abnormality. He finished the race with only 300 milliliters or 0.3 of a liter fuel in the car, which is less than the 1 liter minimum that is required in the regulations. So they, Aston Martin, are going to appeal that. So I don't know how that will come off. So just to put it in context, so the amount of fuel he left in the back of his car was exactly the size of a can of soda, so not a lot. So it's obviously got to be about 3.5 times that minimum. So then behind Vettel, you had Hamilton. Fourth was Sainz. Fifth was Alonso. Sixth was Gasly. Seventh was Tsunoda. So good to see double point finishes for both the AlphaTauris, and then I guess the feel-good story of the weekend, well, then one of the other ones, if you're not a fan of Alpine, the two Williams car, Nick Latifi and George Russell coming home 8th and 9th, Max Verstappen rounding up the top 10. And then I guess we should say that, I guess the de facto P10 would be Kimi Raikkonen in the Alfa Romeo. So I guess this really depends on Sebastian Vettel's appeal, but I don't know how they could maybe switch, get that overturned. I don't see any way around that. I mean, we're not talking that he's 10 milliliters or 20 milliliters under the minimum. I mean, he's 700 millimeters under the 1 liter minimum. So that seems a bit much of a big ask, but that was really disappointing. I mean, as most people know, that you and I have really wanted to see a lot from Aston Martin this year, not just from Sebastian, but also from Lance, and the fact that this team has been rebranded and all the obvious Canadian connection both on and off the track. So obviously disappointing. But and just before we go into the break here, and I guess this will tease the conversation on the other side, when you look at the Drivers' Championship, this is where it starts to get pretty interesting. On the top of the Constructors, it is now no longer Red Bull, who have been up there for several weeks now, is now Mercedes leading the Constructors with 300 points. Red Bull 10 points behind with 290. McLaren 163. And then again, getting very interesting, now Ferrari only 3 points behind McLaren in the Constructors' Championship. And this is what we said on Thursday night, guys. Keep an eye on this battle between McLaren and Ferrari and the Constructors, because it is now razor thin. And then Alpine, with the very impressive results this afternoon, have leapfrogged up quite a bit. They are now fifth in the Constructors' Championship with 75. Now going over to the drivers, Lewis Hamilton leapfrogging Max Verstappen, 192 points. Max second with 186. Lando Norris still in third with 113. Valtteri Bottas 108, Sergio Perez 104, and none of those drivers scored any points today. Neither did Charles Leclerc, who is in sixth with 80 points. And then Carlos Sainz is now also joint on points he's actually seventh. Charles leading, I guess, on the tiebreaker with the balance of results, but both the Ferrari drivers 80 points each. Anyways, let's take a quick break here. We'll come back on the other side, and there's still plenty of juicy things to talk about. We'll do that in just a moment. So guys, don't go away. We'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for the New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
Okay, welcome back to the show. And just a little note, no live stream tonight or probably for the next couple of weeks. So while we also enjoy our summer break, lots of good content coming your way. But unfortunately, live stream will be postponed just for a couple of weeks. But we'll be back at the end of the month when we get back to racing at Spa-Francorchamps. Okay, Mark, we've talked about some of the, I guess, the high points and the low points, but plenty of news to talk about. Where do you want to go next?
You know what? So your timing, your transition is perfect. So we have some breaking news right now. So according to a release that just came out right now, a report from Jamie Woodhouse at planetf1.com, who typically isn't a resource that I would lean into heavily for breaking Formula One news, Vettel has provisionally been reinstated to P2 pending an appeal. So here's what it sounds like happened. It sounds like the FIA, as they are apt to do, attempted to extract a liter of fuel from his car at the conclusion of the race. Ultimately, they weren't able to do it. And of course, there are suspicions that the car had run out of fuel, which is why Sebastian was asked to stop the car on the side of the track following the conclusion of the race rather than bring it into Parc Fermé. Ultimately, the Aston Martin team is arguing that he had been asked to pull the car over, possibly due to a fuel pump issue. So the Aston Martin team, Otmar Szafnauer, is arguing that their data indicates that there should be roughly 1.4 liters of fuel in that fuel tank. Now, the Aston Martin team were given the opportunity to help extract to pump that fuel out. They weren't successfully able to do it. They did petition the result or the ruling of the stewards. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, and this is something that I've also never heard of before, the entire car is being transported to the FIA complex in France immediately following the conclusion of the Grand Prix weekend. So the FIA is actually taking the entire car plus the power unit, and they're going to be recruiting a slew of the Aston Martin mechanics to help conclude this investigation in France over the summer break. So I don't think they would typically ever confiscate a car as part of an investigation. But again, given the fact that we're going into a four-week break, they clearly have an opportunity to. But as of this exact moment, he has been provisionally reinstated to P2. So curiously right now, if you go to the F1 website, it is actually showing the constructors and the driver standings inclusive of Vettel's 18 points, and it subtracts those 18 points from the rest of the field. But Wikipedia, ESPN, Planet F1, all of these other sites, motorsport.com, etc., they are showing the standings, the constructors and the driver standings, excluding Vettel's finish. But I guess it's going to be interesting to know. So as of right now, it's kind of up in the air.
Yeah, well, I can confirm just going over to motorsport.com. Otmar Szafnauer, team principal of Aston Martin, told motorsport.com is, quote, "I can confirm an intent to appeal. So once we learn more, if then we have grounds, we will appeal. And if not, we'll drop it. But we have 96 hours. By all of our calculations, there should be 1.44 liters of fuel left in the car after the 300 milliliter sample that was taken," end quote. So there you go. They actually believe that there was, 1.74 liters of fuel in the car. So that is very, very interesting. And sure, why not? I mean, that is a big result to let slip through your fingers if you're Aston Martin and you have absolutely nothing to lose. I mean, you're going to be disqualified if the penalty in the DQ stands. And, you don't have to worry about it getting this car transported to another track for, say, a race next weekend. Absolutely nothing to lose. So keep your eyes on the news over the next couple of days, because this should be an interesting one, and obviously has championship implications should Vettel be fully reinstated and everybody shift back down. So that is very, very interesting to see. So double confirmed from a couple of different websites. But the other thing, and I was being really sarcastic about this during the race, because I know I sent you a message while I was watching. And after the precedent that we saw in Great Britain at Silverstone a couple of weeks ago, when Lewis Hamilton punted Max Verstappen off the track at Copse Corner into the gravel. Today, after the unsafe release of Kimi Raikkonen from the Alfa Romeo pits, and by doing so, hitting the front right side of Nikita Mazepin's car, thereby breaking his suspension and ending his race, Kimi be given a 10-second penalty. The cynic in me couldn't help but think, does Haas appeal this? Do they reenact this this whole scenario by getting either Nikita or Mick Schumacher to get back into the cars and to reenact this like in real life in a filming day session. And I could, because I mean, we talked about it last week, this whole appeal and a lot of the jokes and, you know, and serious comments that we made, notwithstanding. It's obviously not going to happen, but part of me couldn't help but wonder that wouldn't something be said otherwise? Well, you know, he ended my race. It was only a 10-second penalty. Is that really fair? But yeah, let's not go down that rabbit hole halfway, should we?
No. So I think at this point, and we've got so much juicy stuff to get to tonight, and only so much time, I feel like we absolutely deserve to give Esteban Ocon his flowers for
absolutely.
His performance this weekend. This is a guy that's been in Formula One. He's been out of Formula One. He rose through the Mercedes Academy. I know a lot of people were talking to Toto Wolff because he was a big part of his development early in his career, helped identify him in the lower formulas, helped funded his development. Ultimately, he came into Formula One back in, oh my goodness, I think around 2016. He finished the back half of the season with Manor, moved over to Force India, had a stellar 2017, slightly choppy 2018, but still put in a ton of points finishes.
Yep.
2019, of course, he was out of the sport after Lawrence Stroll bought Force India and it was rebranded Racing Point. He was displaced by Lance Stroll, so he sat out 2019, spent the entire year in the Mercedes team, in the garage, no doubt learned a lot. And in 2020, when Renault was going through the initial stages of their rebranding and rejuvenation, and they were starting to bring in some new leadership, he was a perfect fit for that team, being a French driver. Last year, his season finished on a real high. He had points finishes in his last three races. He finished second in Sakhir. And then for him to go out today and be in a position where after that restart, he comes out, he's in the lead early, he fights off. And to be fair, there wasn't ever kind of an aggressive effort by Sebastian Vettel, but Sebastian Vettel was clearly in the faster car today. But the fact that he basically led the race from the fourth lap, fifth lap onwards, and he didn't step a foot wrong, he didn't carry too much speed into a corner, he didn't lock up, he didn't make a mistake, and both he and the team were under pressure that they've no doubt not felt in a very long time. The last time that the Enstone team, so course, prior to being Alpine, it was Renault, and before Renault, it was Lotus, and before Lotus, it was Renault. But the last race victory from this team was 2013 in Australia, a race that was won by Kimi Raikkonen. And with the exception of that second place in Sakhir last year and a couple of podium finishes by Daniel Ricciardo last season, this team has really underperformed since being rebranded as a Works Renault team. So for the Enstone team, that tiny factory outside of Chipping Norton in the hinterland of the Power Valley in the UK, to Esteban Ocon. And of course, we couldn't shower praise on Esteban Ocon without acknowledging the absolutely phenomenal battle that Fernando Alonso engaged in with Lewis Hamilton for 10 laps to hold him back and give Esteban the runway to win this race. But ultimately, what a phenomenal weekend, not only for Esteban Ocon and for Alonso, but for that team. And just in the spirit of talking about Fernando Alonso, he put in a brilliant performance at Silverstone. And we talked about the fact that he's now leaning into his own instincts, his own feel, as opposed to listening to technical direction from the team. Mm-hmm. But this was also his best finish since he finished fourth in Malaysia back in 2014. So great performance for Fernando Alonso as well.
Yeah, actually, that battle that he had with Lewis Hamilton was really, really good. And I thought that it was really exciting to watch that, but also to get the insight from Nico Rosberg, who was doing the color commentary. It was a bit funny because, mentioned, like they didn't have the Sky feed on the English feed on the F1 TV app to start in the race. It came back in a little later on. I'd flipped over to listen to Olaf Mol on the Dutch feed. And then I tried listening a little bit later on, and I thought it was really great because you can really tell that when Rosberg is talking, that you really get the feeling that he's not watching from outside the cockpit in the commentary box, but this is a guy that is actually calling what he's seeing by sitting in the car and talking about, you know, actually living that lap and what's going on. And I thought it was really interesting too, because when he was talking about that battle, if you want to call it that, between Ocon and Vettel, I thought it was really interesting how he was saying that it was such a different position to be leading the race rather than being in second place, and how that that all the pressure really was on Ocon, because just the way that you have to defend, how you have to think when you're out front, and how it's a little bit easier to be the following car and kind of really get into your opponent's head and really learn how they're driving and how they're going around the track, and how you're able to take more risks. Because if you try to make a move and it doesn't stick, then so what? You drop back, maybe you lose a couple of seconds or something like that. But if you're actually one of the cars that is your faster car, as it really appeared that Vettel was today, that, you know, you'll be back on him in, say, you know, a couple of corners or a couple of laps. So it's not really a big loss, say, on a track like Hungary. But I mean, I thought that Esteban Ocon did a great job out front there. But I mean, like you so rightly suggested or mentioned, that you really have to give a huge assist to Fernando Alonso. And I mean, you could say he was running interference by fighting with Hamilton for all those laps, but he wasn't going to make it easy for Hamilton to pass, regardless if his teammate was leading the race or not. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of personal history there, despite the fact that they both say they have a lot of respect for each other, yada, yada, yada. But it was really, you know, fun to watch those two really scrapping it out, because, I mean, they're both veteran drivers in their own rights. I mean, and Fernando, for me, I think has turned into be a bit of a pleasant surprise, I guess you could say, because I mean, you could tell that it was taking him a while to figure out that car over the first half dozen races or so. But I guess maybe going back to about maybe France or thereabouts, it seemed to like he was really starting to come into his own. And I think he'd even said at the time that he was needing less direction from the engineers and from the pit wall and stuff like that, and was just feeling a lot more intuitive in the cockpit. And I think it's really showed over the past several Grand Prix now. And I think you got to be really excited now if you're within that team. And I guess today is a little bit kind of similar to Italy last year, what with all the stoppages we had in that race, and then at the end you had Sainz and Gasly scrapping it out for the race win, and ultimately Gasly ended up winning that one, which is a feel-good moment of 2020. But certainly this is one of those races that we'll remember from 2021.
Absolutely. For me, this was an important race in a lot of senses. It was as sad as it was to see Max go out the way he did, because I think we all want to see a competitive championship, as sad as it was to see Perez out and Lando and Charles Leclerc and all of this young talent out so early, mm-hmm. It was still in so many ways a feel-good race. It was a feel-good weekend because, and I talked about this a little bit on one of the last podcasts, coming out of the Grand Prix at Silverstone on that Sunday, Lewis had put in a great drive. He'd won a Grand Prix. He was back in the championship. I felt terrible. I felt sick to my stomach. I didn't like the way the weekend had come together. I didn't like the outpouring of negativity after that contact. I don't like the fact that we spent 2 weeks litigating something that to so many of us just seemed to be so obviously a Hamilton error. It seemed to be a racing incident. This mm-hmm. weekend was something of a fresh start. And as terrible as it was for those drivers that I mentioned, and I feel terrible for them, I feel terrible for their teams, ultimately to see Esteban Ocon win a Grand Prix when I don't think any of us had that on our radar, to see Fernando Alonso put in a great performance. And just on the Fernando piece as well, when he left Formula One at the end of 2018, I reflected back on his title in 05 and 06 and the great things he did with the Ferrari team. But between the toxicity of that 07 season and the negativity that surrounded the entire experiment with McLaren and Honda, I felt like maybe it was the right time for him to leave Formula One. I feel like he's done a really great job rebuilding the identity of Fernando Alonso. And while he didn't leave Formula One on a high note in 2018, mm-hmm. I feel like he's rebuilding that character and his identity. And I'm excited about it. And I was really happy to see that performance today. That battle with Hamilton was fantastic. But even the comments after race, and people were talking to him about why he was so aggressively defending against Hamilton. And you're right. Like, he was going to, regardless of whether it was Esteban Ocon at the front. I think, to be honest, and he alluded to this in some of the interviews as well, he still believed he had a shot at the win. But he also made a comment that one of the reasons he was defending against Hamilton so aggressively was he wanted to do it for Max, which I thought was a really interesting comment. And of course, ultimately, after 10 laps of being under intense pressure from Hamilton in a car, by the way, that at that point was lapping 4 seconds faster than any other car in the mm-hmm. race, ultimately, you know, after 10 laps, you're going to make a mistake, and Hamilton got through. But I thought that was a phenomenal performance. And I know we jump around a bit, but I have to go back to Nico. I was very, very skeptical of having Nico Rosberg in the booth.
You're not a fan. I know that.
Qualifying. No, I'm not at all. And, you know, one of my good friends and I were messaging back and forth on WhatsApp all week, and we were so apprehensive about this. And I was looking for reasons to criticize him during practice and qualifying, but I liked some of his insights. And then by the time we got to the race weekend, my buddy messaged me and he said, Rosberg hasn't been horrible. And that is like the highest possible praise from my buddy regarding Nico's performance. But I loved it. And I think the best way to kind of put this into context for American viewers is having Nico in the booth is very much like when Tony Romo moved off of the grid and went into the booth. Just he delivered one, the chemistry obviously with Crofty, it's not something that's going to develop overnight, and it's going to have to build if this is something that Nico wants to do, because I think calling races full-time is a big commitment. I don't think there's any significant money in it for Nico, but I liked obviously his insights. I love the fact that he was able to criticize the drivers in a way that I think some of these other folks can't, because they don't have the experience of competing in a Grand Prix or driving a Formula One car like Crofty and some of these other folks. But I loved his insights, and some of them as well. Like, I'm just making a note here, very candid, picked lots of small things. He made a really great observation about Hamilton when Hamilton switched tires, and he spoke to the fact that, look, Hamilton can't go all out on these tires for the first two laps, because if he does, he's going to activate the compound too early and they're going to wear down much quicker than they would. He's going to go and he's going to run them fairly slow for the first two laps, keep them within 5 to 10% of the peak operating temperature, because then he's going to get 20 ultra aggressive laps out of them. I'm like, that's an unbelievable insight that we would never get from somebody who hasn't competed in a Formula One car. And even some of the analysts that we hear from, they may have competed at Formula One. They've never raced a V6 turbo hybrid. They've never raced on Pirelli tires. They've never raced on anything that is relatively close to these compounds. So, you know what? By the end of the weekend, I'm a bit of a Nico convert, to be totally honest. I thought he did a stellar job, and I look forward to him being in the booth more, just because the insights that he was able to deliver are unlike those that we typically get out of that crew.
You know, I must admit, I do enjoy Martin Brundle doing the commentary on the Sky Sports feed, but I've found that over the past year and a half or so, what with the things being changed up because of the travel and all those related things because of the pandemic, and sometimes that is affected who could be in the booth for different races alongside Crofty. I think that it's worked well, and I thought that Nico did a great job. Anyways, let's take another quick break. Then I know we both have to get going, so we'll wrap it up quickly, but there are still a couple really good things we need to talk about, and we need to talk about Williams, because this Absolutely. Was the breakthrough that I think that they really have been craving, desiring, desperate for all these number of years. And we'll talk about that in just a moment, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show, everyone. Mark and Mark breaking down today's very exciting and very eventful Hungarian Grand Prix. And as we start to slowly close things down here on what's been a busy weekend of our own, we still have a couple of things to talk about. And one of those, well, I mean, there's still several. Valtteri Bottas has apologized to Toto Wolff for what he called his small mistake, which obviously had big repercussions. Red Bull is afraid that they might lose yet another Honda power unit as a result of that crash. Bottas, because of that, is going to be slapped with a 5-place grid penalty in Belgium, as will Lance Stroll. So here we go. It's already happening. All the fallout from that first lap mayhem, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. But this is another feel-good story in and of itself. I mean, obviously, Ocon winning the double, very good high points finish for Alpine in Hungary, but also both the Williams cars coming home in the top 10, and George Russell in tears after Williams scoring points today. And I thought it was great, too, because Nick was right up there running a P3 after the restart, and I thought that it just really showed what a great teammate George Russell is. He was on team radio saying, you know, pit me first, do whatever you need to do. If you have to compromise my race, go for it, as long as it helps Nicholas and it gets him a good finish and it helps the team do what you need to do to keep him running as high as you can. Is basically what he was saying. I thought it was a great story. I think it was great to see.
I think the best part of all of this is we probably all knew that George was going to have a breakthrough at some point of his own and he was going to get into the points. I think this is important for his confidence. I think the last thing he ever wanted was to leave this team after three full championships and go to Mercedes without having scored a point. I don't think that's the legacy he wanted to leave with this team, but the fact that he could have that breakthrough and score points despite the fact that qualifying wasn't great for Williams. They didn't look great in practice. For him to have that breakthrough simultaneously with his teammate is just a whole other order of magnitude in terms of feel-good story. I'm obviously ecstatic, and folks often accuse us of being homers for Red Bull 1 month and then Mercedes the next. For me, at the end of the day, if there's anyone that I'm emotionally invested in as a driver, it's Nicholas, it's Lance, they're Canadian kids, they're great kids. I totally get it. They come from really, really, really well-endowed financial situations. I get it, but they're both good kids. And I wanted to see this so much for Nicholas. We obviously don't know what his future holds beyond the season. If it wraps up, which I hope it doesn't, at least he's going to be able to reflect back on his career, know that he finished with a P8, possibly a P7 finish, depending on how the investigation into Vettel goes. But at the same time, for Nicholas Latifi, this is also a good news story, because as Williams starts to more closely investigate who their driver lineup will be for next year, this is something that they can look to that, you know what, given the opportunity to race at the front of the pack, can he be consistent? Can he go an entire Grand Prix without making a mistake? And these are things that I think he's shown, but it's typically been at the back of the pack. For him to put in a points finish and, like you said, run in a podium position for the first few laps after the restart, I couldn't be more happy for Nicholas. And to your point about George Russell as well, when he came over the radio early in the race and he said, look, if you need to compromise my race to help Nikki, do it, prioritize Nikki. Like, not only was that a great message, but what do you think Lewis and the Mercedes team are thinking when they hear that? Like, this kid is not only a top tier potential superstar talent, although again, we haven't necessarily seen or given him the opportunity to demonstrate that given the car he's been in. But if you're Lewis and you're Mercedes and you hear that, this kid seems to be the total package in terms of teamsmanship and team spirit and being there to support the team. I thought that was a fantastic message, but I think the best part of this isn't just that they had a breakthrough, but both of the drivers broke into the points. And I went back to look because I wanted to get a sense of the last time they had a double points finish. The last time Williams had two drivers in the points at the same time was Malaysia in 2017. Wow. When Felipe Massa finished P9 and Lance Stroll finished P8. And again, I don't want to get into it now. We'll talk about it in the Spaces chat later this week and in the next few podcasts. Very disappointed with Lance this weekend. His run of performances recently has been extremely, extremely poor. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of work to do there. I don't want to get into that now because I want to stay on this kind of good mood, good vibes kind of storyline, but ultimately incredible performance by Williams, this team, something that they can significantly build on. And I think it just reinforces that everything that they're doing in terms of kind of the infrastructure of that team and from the reorg of the structure in terms of eliminating overlap and unifying the team with the factory and all those kind of things that they've been doing recently is showing some payoff, some return on the investment that they've been making.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the naysayers and the haters might say, well, you know, if it wasn't for all the chaos that eliminated half dozen of the contenders that would have taken up those point finishing positions, then you guys would have been outside of the points anyways, as you usually are. But on the flip side, I mean, we still restarted that race with, what, 14, 15 cars, whatever it was. They still had to fight for all that. Sure, I mean, Nicky was in a good spot where he was to restart that race, but, you know, there there was still, what, 69 laps or 67 laps to go, something, whatever it was, out of the full race distance. And I think that it's just good verification that what they're doing at Williams is going in the right direction. I think, as a rule, their cars are usually fairly reliable. I mean, it's obvious that they lack ton of pace. And perhaps today that will really give them the shot in the arm that they really need. That, maybe we had a little bit of good luck go our way, but we still had to, 97% of that race to run, and we still got both of the cars into the top 10. And I can totally understand why George was really emotional about that afterwards, because, I mean, that has been something that has eluded him in that Williams car several times over the past couple of years. He's come really close on a couple of points, a couple of races. And Sebastian Vettel saying after Mugello last year that he felt really bad for taking that last point away from George Russell. I think Fernando said it a couple of races ago. And I mean, that one off at Sakhir when at the end of the year when he filled in for Lewis when he had COVID, I mean, that was obviously a memorable race and one for the books, but it was it would have been expected in that car. And you can see that it would be so much more meaningful and so much more emotional for George being this with the team that he's been racing for the past 2.5 years, and possibly, who knows, this might be one of the last races, if not the last race that he races for them. Absolutely. If they actually do get this move done and he moves over to Mercedes, which has been long expected and seems to be just a question of time more than anything else. And I couldn't help but being a little bit cynical again. You know, I know I'm chill, Mark. You're excited, Mark, to all of our listeners, to our community.
You're also lead, Mark, by the way. That'll take to the grave, but you're also lead, Mark.
Well, lead, Mark. Okay. Maybe I'm going to be cynical, Mark, today, because when you're saying, well, you know, maybe to Mercedes, maybe to Lewis, that you think, oh, this kid's a great teammate. You know, look how selfless he is. I couldn't help but thinking, Lewis and Mercedes are going to think, hey, this is good-natured doormat. He's going to be the perfect replacement for Valtteri Bottas. He's just going to say and do what we want, not get in the way of Lewis Hamilton, just like Nico Rosberg did for all of those years. But who knows?
That's a great point. Yep. And I don't want to be super speculative, although that's kind of my specialty on the show. But if Mercedes had any plans to make that announcement during the summer break, or goodness forbid, execute the actual move itself, this Grand Prix teed it up perfectly, which was a brutal Bottas mistake at the beginning of the Grand Prix, which knocks him out, compromises all the points they would have taken there, plus the cost, plus the PR disaster that this is following Silverstone, but also the fact that George Russell puts in this stellar performance. It tees up, it segues into that announcement perfectly, and again, I'm super confident it's going to happen. I still don't believe they'd make the switch, but if anything could have predicated or triggered that or helped drive them towards that decision, that maybe this would be it. But ultimately, it just makes the announcement for Mercedes that much easier, ultimately.
Yeah, I couldn't help but thinking the same thing as you were talking there. You planted that seed in my mind that maybe that was that incident that if Toto still was maybe sitting on the fence as to what to do with George and Valtteri, maybe that is that one final maybe verification that he needs to finally make that decision one way or another. And because... Well, I mean, the big smash that that George and Valtteri had at Imola notwithstanding, but maybe this was the one that, and I know that at this point they are leading both championships, but certainly by Valtteri knocking himself out of the race, and fortunately he also damaged Perez, knocking him out of the race, and compromising Max's race, but still, the Mercedes were running at 50% strength, so sure, they have a small lead in both championships now, but Toto's going to see that as an opportunity lost, even though the incident that knocked out his two main rivals cost him. It was started by his own car, which ultimately didn't finish the race himself.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, Mark, as we wrap it up here, finally, Lewis Hamilton said he's still suffering from the after effects of COVID that he had last fall, and he was actually treated for a bout of fatigue and dizziness after his that real epic run to third place in Hungary this afternoon.
This was, and I tweeted this out during the race, but I had this sense that by the end of the Grand Prix, by the time the checkered flag was waved, that Hamilton was going to be exhausted. And he was going to be exhausted because he literally had to fight through the entire field and then go 10 rounds with Fernando Alonso. And I think sometimes for those of us that haven't spent an extensive amount of time in an open wheel Formula One car, I think there's this perception that you're sitting down and it's easy. You have to remember that, one, the track conditions, as much as it seemed gloomy and it seemed a little bit cloudy, and there was this perception that it was cool because it was wet to start the race, it was hot. It was 30 degrees at the track. It was 40 degrees at the track itself, on the at the track surface temperature. Ultimately, he's in a car. He has to fight. There was no easy overtake here because of the way that this track is constructed and because of the widths in the corners. He had to fight. And driving a Formula One car is a physical battle at the best of times. And fortunately for Lewis, for much of the last 7 years, he's been at the front. So it's been more a case of holding on to that lead and being consistent and not making mistakes. But ultimately today he was in a position where he literally had to fight from the back of the pack to get up to the front to score this podium finish. So that alone would put him into a position where you're going to be physically exhausted, you're going to be drained, and you're going to be heavily dehydrated, which I think is exactly the case. But I think ultimately that what we learned afterwards was it wasn't necessarily just exhaustion and dehydration from the race itself, but rather he's still fighting this concept of, or this idea of, long COVID. So I think, as all of our listeners know, and anyone watched the Grand Prix last year, he missed the second race in Bahrain last year because he was diagnosed with COVID. He sat at a race. He was able to come back for Abu Dhabi. But as he was suggesting after the race, the effects of COVID are still very, very, very much present. And that was something that became a reality for him as this Grand Prix wore on today.
Yeah, no doubt he'll be glad that we've got a couple of weeks coming up to rest up, because that's certainly, from all the stories that you hear out there, and you wouldn't necessarily think that an elite athlete like a Formula One driver like Lewis Hamilton would be a candidate for, you know, being a COVID long hauler. And obviously he's suffered less than some other people that have become, you know, very ill during the course of the pandemic. But yeah, I mean, Formula One is grueling, even on inverted commas, an easy afternoon. I mean, when you're pushing hard on a physically demanding track and pushing to fight your way from the back of the grid, from the back of the race order, like he did this afternoon, that requires an extra dimension of effort. So, we definitely cannot overlook the amount of work that he put in this afternoon to get onto the podium. Was really rather incredible. But yeah. Mark, I think this is a great place to park it, to bring it into to park Fermé for tonight. Both
but
of us.
But we should tease Thursday.
I was going to do that. I was going to throw it your way. So why don't you tell everybody what's coming up? Because this is going to be a good one.
So, as you alluded to earlier, we're going into the summer break, which means that Formula One shuts down for 4 weeks. And this is an unheard of concept. You don't necessarily see this in Indy. You don't see this in NASCAR. You certainly don't see it in the major professional North American sports leagues. Sometimes you'll shut down for an Olympic break in hockey and you'll have All-Star breaks and things like that. But Formula One shuts down for 4 weeks. And it just reflects how grueling this sport historically is from a management perspective, from a logistical perspective. So really, with the exception of the Aston Martin mechanics who were going off to the FIA complex to help prove that there's a liter of fuel in Sebastian Vettel's number 5 car, the sport shuts down for 4 weeks. But our commitment is that we want to ramp up some really great content. And the first piece of that content that's going to drop is coming this Thursday. A couple of weeks ago, we recorded our long promised F1 2022 primer episode with Tim Horaney of Canada's TSN. That is the Canadian ESPN equivalent. We recorded a 2-hour mega show where we start talking about what to expect next year, what the impact of the changes will be to the cars, the chassis, the aero, the 18-inch wheels. About a month ago, we solicited from you on Twitter, what type of things do you want us to talk about? What type of things are you most interested in learning? We did a great recording session with him a couple of weeks ago. We packaged up. That's going to drop on Thursday. We've got some other great stuff that's going to drop throughout the summer as well. So make sure you keep tuning in. We're going to have lots of mailbag content. We're going to have lots of Twitter shows. We are finalizing some details on a couple of other shows. We're going to lean into an individual who's going to help kind of walk us through the marketing and the kind of commercial side of Formula One, which we're super excited about. And then, of course, once we get through the summer break, and I'm going to tease this as well, we get a monster triple header. We go to Spa, which is obviously one of the best tracks on the circuit. So August 29th, we're back at the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa. A week later, we're at Zandvoort for the first Dutch Grand Prix in decades, which I know you are ecstatic about,
exciting,
and Max fans should be. And then a week after that, we're at Monza. So we have this monster triple header to kick off the end of August, the beginning of September. It's going to be awesome. And the summer break's going to go by like crazy. But one thing I would tease, and this is something we've seen over the past few years, is a lot of more instrumental logistical decision making happens during the summer break. So we've alluded to this over the last couple of weeks. Don't be surprised if we hear some announcements regarding driver changes for next year. I think we would know what those probably would be. But ultimately, in the meantime, expect to see a really exciting podcast drop on Thursday. This one was a little bit choppy in terms of audio quality. We had some technical issues, which we tried desperately to overcome. So if this doesn't sound as polished as they normally do, and we take great pride in the production quality of our shows, apologies. Thursday we'll be back in force, great quality, and then we've got some exciting content coming over the next few weeks. And we know that we could have kept talking about this race, this Grand Prix, this weekend. We didn't even get into qualifying, but we could have talked about this for hours. We are going to drop a Spaces chat this coming Thursday, which we've teased, 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. So if there's anything we missed, please join us in the Spaces chat. We always have some great conversation. But Mr. Daly, that's all I got. Anything you want to close this bad boy with?
No, I was just going to say I'm looking forward to the one with Tim because as a former race driver and an analyst, he really brings an added dimension of insight and knowledge, and I'm really looking forward to that. But that's all I've got. I know both you and I have got to move on and do some other things this evening. So thank you one and all for sticking with us over the first half of the season. Looking forward to these next couple of shows coming up, and then obviously looking forward to getting back to racing in a couple of weeks. That's it from us. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much for watching. If you want to get in touch, easiest way is on Twitter at ScooteryF1Pod and via email at ScooteryF1Pod@gmail.com. Had a great email from Yarmo, who is actually going off to Monza. We had a great email, which we definitely will address in an upcoming show, because he had a lot of questions about going to a Grand Prix for the first time, which is great, which is a great one that is always good to talk about for anybody that's going to race, and we'll do that coming up soon. Anyways, that's a wrap. Have a great week, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the race, and we'll talk to you again soon. Bye for now.